Concord, Massachusetts. It's been a long day, Jordan said to himself as he walked tiredly to the lavatory of his suite in Otero's home. I hope it's been a productive one. It worried him that he hadn't heard from Aditi the night before. What happened to her? Why didn't she call? As he reached for his toothbrush, though, he started thinking about how Mitch Thornberry could help him get Aditi free of Halleck's so-called protective custody. Thanks to Carlos, I've shown that I can appear on global video whenever I want to. There's no point in Halleck keeping Aditi and me separated. But will that be enough to actually get her to release Aditi? Is there more than logic involved here? Of course there is, he realized. There's Halleck's ego and her sense of power. A politician's power depends on what he or she can make other people do. Halleck thinks that by controlling Aditi, she can control me. I've just shown her that she's wrong. How will she react? And how will she react to Mitch getting me nominated for a seat on the council? That will bring things to a boil, no question. But if I win a council seat, she won't be able to keep Aditi and me separated. As he returned to the bedroom, the holographic viewer on the far wall glowed to life, and there was Aditi, sitting in a room that looked unfamiliar to him. His wife smiled at him.
Hello, Jordan.
Aditi, dearest, how are you? Where are you? Swiftly, Aditi explained her trip to Habitat Gandhi. Jordan sank onto the padded bench at the foot of his bed. 400,000 kilometers away, he muttered.
Once we were more than 8 light-years apart, Aditi reminded him.
That was before we met. I have no intention of staying separated from you any longer than I have to.
Castiglione claims you're going to be invited to join me here.
Then Halleck will have us both under her control.
You won't come?
Jordan clenched both his fists. With cold, deliberate anger rising inside him, he said, I'll come. But not to stay there. I'll come to take you away with me. First thing the next morning, in Chicago, Hamilton Cree reported to his new boss. The innocuously named Unicorn Recovery Agency was housed on the 27th floor of one of Chicago's many combined business residential towers. Cree's apartment was on the 40th floor of the same building. Only a one-room studio, but it was new and almost luxurious compared to the dump he had been renting in Albuquerque. Gonna be easy for me to get to work, he told himself with a grin. Short commute. Just drop down the elevator chute. His boss was a retired veteran of the Defense Intelligence Agency, a short, surly-looking Hispanic with mahogany skin, his black, tightly curled hair hanging down to his collar. Despite his lack of height, his shoulders were heavy and wide, like a professional football player. It made him look like a small, truculent rhinoceros, Cree thought, although the man's nose was little more than a perforated wart. The office was modest and spare. The only decoration was a nameplate on the desk, Colonel Tomas Paloma, with a tiny outline of a dove after the name. Cree understood enough Spanish to know that Paloma was a slang term for prostitute, but he didn't let a smile crack his sober expression as he stood stiffly before the desk.
You don't have a jacket? Paloma asked, his tone just a bit above a snarl.
Paloma was in a three-piece business suit, dark gray with silver pinstripes. Standing before the desk in his shirt sleeves, Cree answered,
Yes, sir, it's at my desk.
Paloma nodded.
Good. See that you're properly dressed at all times. We run a tight ship here.
Cree suppressed a groan.
Yes, sir.
Gesturing to the hard wooden chair in front of his desk, Paloma said, Sit down. With a glance at his desktop computer screen, he continued,
You have a very good record with the NMHB.
Cree said nothing.
You actually met this star traveler, Jordan Kell?
I didn't really meet him. I was on a security detail when he visited the Rio Grande Gorge above Taos.
But you'd recognize him if you saw him again.
With a nod,
Yes, I would. And his wife, too.
Paloma studied Cree's face for several heartbeats, then made up his mind.
Good. We're putting together a security team to protect Kell. You'll be on it.
Thanks. The trace of a smile flickered across Paloma's dark face.
24/7. Where you goest, thou goest. Comprende?
Yo comprende, said Cree. Paloma's frown could have soured milk.
I hope you're better at security than you are at Spanish.
Vera Griffin felt as if she were in some vid production of a spy thriller. She left the network offices after a morning of wrestling with McKinley and his public relations staff, and headed off by herself to her lunch date with Castiglione. McKinley, of course, wanted to handle all the interviews with Jordan Kell with his own staff. He did not want Griffin involved at all. "This is the PR department's territory," he exclaimed just about every 10 minutes during their stormy meeting, while his 6 staffers, 3 women and 3 men, all in bright colors, nodded their heads in metronome unison. And each time Griffin answered in her little girl voice, "Mr. Otero himself has told me to stay with Mr. Kell and oversee all the arrangements you make." Her little girl voice had helped her through many stormy confrontations in the past, but McKinley wasn't buying it. "I run the PR department, not you."
"Of course you do, Mr. McKinley. But you see, I'm in the midst of negotiating an agreement with the other 3 multinational networks for Mr. Kell's future appearances to be shared by us all."
In the end, McKinley had reluctantly agreed to give Griffin a veto power over all the interviews his people set up for Jordan Kell. And he also okayed the 2 dozen bloggers and chat hosts that Vera had added to the list of network news anchors. "Amateurs," he had groused.
"Self-employed interviewers," Griffin had countered.
McKinley and his staff had finally left Griffin's tiny office, muttering among themselves. Now, as she walked into the restaurant for her lunch with Castiglione, her wrist phone tingled her arm. It was Castiglione, his handsome face looking sad, almost desolate.
"I can't make it to lunch with you, sweet one. My duties have taken me into space. I'm aboard a Habitat in the L5 location."
Griffin almost felt relieved. "Rudy's fun, but he's going to dump me sooner or later," she told herself as she watched his face in the minuscule phone screen, nattering away about how important his work was. Then he said,
"But I need you to do a favor for me if you can. I need to speak to Jordan Kell as quickly as you can arrange it."
"Of course, Rudy," she said. He gave her his contact number and clicked off. "He's in an orbital habitat with Kell's wife," Griffin thought as she absently allowed the maitre d' to lead her to a table for 2, far in the rear of the restaurant. "I wonder how Kell will react to that."
"Luncheon for 1, the maitre d' murmured as he held out a chair for her. And Griffin wondered what it would be like to have lunch with Jordan Kell.